MC Lob Shear, the host of the Cash Flow Ninja podcast and also the president and chief wealth and investment strategist of Producers Wealth, where we help our clients integrate cash flow banking, also known as infinite banking, with their business and investments. If you're interested in learning more about how we create strategies that integrate cash flow banking and investments to turbocharge them, you can access a video series at yourownbankingsystem.com. That's yourownbankingsystem.com.
Welcome to the Cash Flow Ninja, the podcast sharing how to create income streams and manage, multiply, and protect your wealth in the new economy. Here is your host inside the dojo, MC Laubscher.
Hello, Cash Flow Ninjas. MC Laubscher here, and welcome to another episode on the Cash Flow Ninja. I have a great show for you today. And in today's show, we're going to look at recession-proof investment cash flow diversification. My guest in this episode is Ryan Smith. Ryan brings with him more than 15 years of extensive business experience in market evaluation, property analysis, management systems, due diligence, finance, and much, much more. Ryan and his affiliates co-manage multiple investment funds, which specialize in investing in mobile home park communities and participates in the ownership and or management of over 20,000 mobile home park community lots. Ryan graduated from the University of Tampa with a Bachelor's of Science in Computer Science. As an athlete, he was highly recruited for both baseball and basketball and was drafted as a senior in high school by the Baltimore Orioles and again in college by the Anaheim Angels. Ryan pursued his athletic talents by playing baseball throughout his college experience. His foresight and ability to communicate the state of the marketplace has propelled him to be a featured commentator alongside the likes of Mayor Rudy Giuliani, General Colin Powell, and other notable individuals. He currently is on the board of Young Life College, UCF, and is a member of the advisory board for the National Christian Foundation's Orlando chapter. Ryan lives in Orlando with his wife and two children. If you're interested in joining our investors group, you can go to cashflowninja.com/investors group and fill out an application form and or email me at info@cashflowninja.com to start the discussion to see if you're a good fit for our group.
Are you having a hard time finding great investment properties? Unfortunately, the best deals are rarely found locally. Successful investing begins with the right properties in the right markets. Norada Real Estate provides everything you need to invest in the best deals across the United States. Our simple, proven system will help you create real wealth and passive monthly cash flow. Learn how to find the best deals by downloading your free copy of The Ultimate Guide to Passive Real Estate Investing at noradarealestate.com. That's noradarealestate.com.
Ryan, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Can you please share a little bit about your background and journey with my listeners?
Sure. So, to keep it short for their benefit, I grew up in Central Florida in Orlando. My family was in the real estate business, more single family residential, the goal of buying, fixing, holding long term. I was more of a technology guy. Taught myself to code at a young age. Built a software application in my teenage years to basically help my dad with his financial analysis, do a better job at financially analyzing his investments. The benefit of that was, one, it worked, so he got a benefit, and two, I made some money from that software company, which was helpful in launching my own pursuit in the space. And so I was an athlete, got drafted professionally. I was a pitcher, got drafted by the Baltimore Orioles out of high school and the Anaheim Angels in college. Chose to pursue business over professional sports, which was a great decision. It's one I would go back and do 100 times out of 100 over again, and really build what has become the business today. And so kind of one of the transition points is out of college, started buying single family residential. My wife and I started buying single family residential with the goal of building a base of assets, renting them out, holding them long term, you know, have the tenants pay off the mortgage kind of model. We realized once we got to about 20 or so properties in our, we were in our early 20s, we realized pretty quickly that it wasn't a scalable model. The efficiencies that we hoped would appear did not. And so, or at least had not yet. So the question we asked ourselves is, would they appear and when? And we didn't really know the answer to either of those questions. So to do things in a way that we thought was better, we spent about, we'll call it a year, researching and evaluating a more scalable, more efficient, for lack of a better term, a better mousetrap, a better model. And we looked at office, retail, industrial, billboard, you know, storage, the gamut, and really, you know, the model that was the most compelling on paper to us due to its moat was the mobile home park space. And you know, like I mentioned, the moat, the moat, if you're a listener to this and you haven't thought of the space before, which, you know, there are fewer and fewer people nowadays that are that have not ever considered investing in mobile home parks. It's becoming more of a trendy concept and more popular. You know, the value that we saw back then was the fact that they were, you know, mobile home parks are needed everywhere. They're not allowed anywhere because they're hated everywhere. And so that's a barrier to entry. It's a supply side constraint. And it's you know, we thought it would bode well for the business and to kind of fast track. It has. And, you know, we built the business around those kind of founding principles. So that's the short story.
Yeah, no, and quite a company that that you guys have built here. One of the things that just it's interesting about that space. You'd mentioned that it's very much needed, and it absolutely is providing low cost housing, but not a lot of folks want them in their cities and so forth. So there's not a lot of zoning or places being rezoned for them. So there's kind of a limited supply.
Correct. So there's approximately 50,000 mobile home parks in the United States, and these are real kind of internal numbers that I'm giving you. So you know, kind of real round, but 50,000 communities nationwide. There's about 100 to 150 that are torn down or redeveloped for highest and best use in any given year, and there's, you know, call it 10 to 20 that are built out of the ground. You know, based on what we could find. And through internal research that are built or developed in any given year. So there's a constraint against new supply, but then there's actually a decline on existing supply. So, you know, demand has been rising, supply is constrained and even declining. And that's, you know, that's a good, it's a good economic headwind, although, you know, I wish it wasn't so, it nevertheless is. But to your point, there's kind of a left brain, right brain reason for why mobile home parks, you know, in short, I would say a lot of your listeners, I'm guessing, but I think if you're listening to this, you probably don't have a problem with the concept of a mobile home park, if properly done, right? We've all seen pictures of the trailer parks, but there's also on the other extreme, there's product that's quite nice. Most people don't have a problem with it conceptually. Where it becomes sticky is the concept of it in close proximity to where they live. Let's just, you know, say next door to where you live now, you'd probably say, well, mobile home parks don't bother me. Just don't put one next door. You know, it's kind of not in my backyard kind of concept. So there's this, you know, kind of emotive reason for nobody wanting mobile home parks. You know, there's a perception of, you know, it hurt property values, crime will go up, you know, dogs and cats will turn up missing, you know, just complete bedlam, none of which is true. But those are kind of the perceived results. But then on the other side, the more pragmatic, and just to kind of cut down to it, mobile home parks are looked to, and they really are, poor sources of tax revenue from local municipalities. So when you look at a piece of land and its use and its highest and best use, mobile home parks are typically not the best use for the land for the purpose of generating taxable revenue to the local municipality. So there's a left brain reason, there's a right brain reason, and all of them play.
I like that, because there's always, you know, Robert Kiyosaki talks about three sides of a coin, right? Heads, tails, and the edge. Yeah. So you got to be able to look at this from all different angles. And I absolutely agree with you. I think that there was a certain kind of idea that a lot of folks still had about these communities in their mind, just from what they've seen on TV. And, you know, you think Cousin Eddie basically from National Lampoon's, right? But it's been completely, I mean, there's some really nice parks with really high quality, quality product in there. What are some of the other reasons that this has become more and more attractive? And really, as you mentioned earlier, has almost become kind of trendy. I'm just thinking back six to seven years when I started reading just a little bit about it and doing some research, and folks asked me, you know, what I'm studying or what I'm reading, I would mention it, and there wouldn't even be a follow-up question. Now there's a lot of interest in it.
Yeah, it's funny. I've been in the industry long enough to have seen it move quite a bit in terms of perception. When we first started, I still remember when we went to buy our first mobile home park, we told our friends and family, and you know, one of them remarked, "Well, at least if it doesn't work out, you'll have a place to live." You know, it was you know, kind of a backhanded compliment, you know, although well-intentioned, but it was very much, what are you thinking? You know, don't throw your life away. You know, you have so much to live for, kid, you know, was kind of the general consensus. And now it's, you know, full circle. Now it's like, oh, you're in the mobile home park business. Yeah. That's, you know, it kind of opens doors and gets you places today. But I think the reason why there's a couple of reasons, but the fundamental reason is one that we've already discussed, which is the merit of the space. You know, I think the fundamentals that I described, that the constraint supply, the growth on the demand side, you know, over time, 15 years ago, I thought that demand for affordable housing would grow. And I thought the supply side would be constrained by the stigma, which is the moat. So if those variables persist, it's likely to be a pretty good business, you know, over the long haul. Although, you know, over the time, let's say the last, you know, 10 to 15 years, there's other products that come, there's things that are more sexy, there's, you know, things that are shiny on the shelf that attract the attention of the larger institutions and the larger investors. But really, when you look at, you know, today, with, you know, rising interest rates, which for some bond investors is a problem, you have the stock market at a high, and there's, you know, fear about a pullback. You know, a lot of people are looking for non-correlation. They're looking for cash flow. They're looking for durable cash flow that is not guaranteed. Obviously, no outcome is guaranteed, but by historical measure has been pretty robust, pretty stable, pretty durable. And, you know, the data around the mobile home park space is about as compelling as at least I've found for myself. So I think other people are starting to realize, and given so few alternatives to invest into, there's a lot of cash looking for a home. And due to the absence of alternatives, mobile home parks is kind of the home right now for a lot of capital that's being deployed in the space. And just from what I'm hearing and seeing in the marketplace, I haven't seen anything like what has happened over the last year, you know, in the space. It's a pretty much, I would say, a watershed moment as institutions are trying to find their way in.
That was one question that I had for you about the players and the institutions that are moving in. Who are some of the big players in the space? For instance, I think one area of interest would be to see obviously your company is operating in there, but who would people be competing against if they're looking to get into the space, or you know, who's the big folks out there competing for properties in this market with limited supply?
Yeah, I would say pretty much it's not really even a who anymore. Pretty much all the big players are looking to deploy capital in this space. If you look at all the big private equity firms by size, you know, there's either rumor or confirmation of each one of them buying in the space. So, you know, pretty much from the top down, you know, if you take the, you know, the top 10 private equity firms in the U.S. by size, I would, and this is a best guess, but based on rumor and in some cases confirmation, I would say 50 to 60%, 5 to 6 of them at least are deploying actively in this space. And some of them significantly, I mean, significant amounts of capital to this space. So it's not, you're definitely going up against, you know, bigger players, but it also depends on what kind of asset you're looking at, you know, what's the quality of the asset, what's the quality of the market, because, you know, obviously the kind of the more sizable players are not going too far downstream in terms of tertiary markets and park-owned homes and smaller unit sizes and things like that. So there's a lot of competition for the more institutional quality assets. And you've seen cap rates dip in the, you know, in the four to five range as a result.
That was my next question on cap rates and some of the returns, because this was one of the very, very attractive features in this. And we've obviously seen in the multifamily space that there's a lot of competition out there for that that's driven down cap rates. What are some of the other things going on in the mobile home park space?
Yeah, so I think if you're looking at it from a cap rate view, you know, there's some transactions I've even heard of that are sub four that have closed. But I would say as a very wide range, depending on quality and location, you're, you know, reasonably 4 to 8. I mean, there's some cases you'll find cap rates a little bit above 8. But there's, you know, there's reasons why. We recently took a look at an 8 cap or a property that was advertised at an 8 cap by the seller, and showed up on site, and it was, you know, we killed the deal within probably the first 5 feet of the property. You know, that property years ago would have been, you know, double digit cap rate, significantly more than. So there's been cap compression across really all the quality, you know, aspects of the asset class, but, there's been a lot of compression, you know, in the higher quality assets. Yeah, I would say that the 3, 4, 5 star or better.
Recession-proof investment is one of the things that a lot of folks have been talking about, where mobile home parks kind of fit in from a market cycle perspective. Obviously, it's I mean, we've had a significant boom in the United States. Where do you see this investment playing in? Does it play into one of those asset classes that'll do well in a recession?
Yeah, I think the data supports it. So I'll you know, answer in a couple of ways, because I think it's important that, you know, nothing there's no guarantee of recession proof. You know, I mean, obviously we want things to be as non-correlated as possible, but that's different than non-correlation from an absolute standpoint. So the data is pretty compelling. There's a lot of data that SNL Financial has, that Green Street Advisors have. A lot of this is public data, you know, that one could obtain. But in short, there's some data that suggests that for the last 20 years, that mobile home park, the manufactured housing sector as a whole, has not seen a quarter over quarter decline in NOI growth in almost 20 years, which is pretty significant. And I'm doing this off the top of my head, so please do review the data. But I believe there's some other asset classes that have had somewhere in the, you know, 15 to 20 quarters of negative NOI growth, and apartments are among those. So when you look at, let's say, an asset class that has had 20 quarters over 20 years of negative growth, and then you look at mobile home parks and say, okay, well, mobile home parks have had as a whole 0 quarters of negative growth, you know, that bodes well. Do I think that'll persist unencumbered over the next 20 years? Possibly. I tend to think there will be some, you know, some ups and downs. The market's pretty frothy today. So I imagine there's some people who are going to get out over their skis, in terms of what they're paying compared to what they can manage and do. And then also when you factor in debt, and, you know, the ability to manage one's debt appropriately in this marketplace, I think it'll create opportunities in the future. But we think the space is quite good for the long haul. We're planning to be active in the space for, you know, roughly the next 10 years or more. So we like the space a lot.
You're listening to Ryan Smith on the Cashflow Ninja podcast. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. Life settlement investments have allowed financial and banking institutions to not only buy their equity contractually, but also diversify their capital from any economic, market, and geopolitical risk. It's been part of the $1 billion blueprint followed by institutional investors. And if you're an accredited investor, you can also now participate in this vehicle with enormous growth potential. You can watch an informational webinar presented by one of the premier organizations providing life settlement investments, Penumbra Solutions, at cashflowninja.com/life settlements. You're listening to Ryan Smith on the Cashflow Ninja podcast, and now back to our interview. Yeah, fantastic. Can you share a little bit about more about your company, your group, your investment philosophy, and then your business model and where you fit into the market? And then also from a value add, how you differentiate yourself in this competitive marketplace?
Sure. So so our company is Elevation Capital Group, and we're the sponsor of, we sponsor funds from time to time, and we have our current fund open. It's called Fund 7, and we're looking to raise about $150 million. We're at about $85 million presently in subscriptions. And so the goal is to buy mobile home parks and then also self-storage, because both asset classes, they're similar in a lot of ways, but they're also different in ways that can be complementary. But in terms of our strategy, our strategy is pretty simple. In nearly every case, we're buying an existing asset that's operationally inefficient, or it could be made better in some way from an NOI perspective. In some cases, we may have to spend some money to bring up NOI and outlay some capital. In other ways, it's more just from a management or operations perspective. But generally, across both asset classes, we're looking to pull one of three levers. We're looking to either push the revenues, the income of the property, and that could be by raising rents over time. It could be by decreasing vacancy or increasing occupancy. It could be by bringing other revenue items to the property, like cable packages or security systems or covered parking or tough sheds or storage lockers or all kinds of ways to add other lines of revenue to the property. But one is more top line. So increase revenue, increase occupancy, and then cut expenses or manage the property more efficiently than might have been the case before we acquired it. So really any one of those levers will do. We like to pull all of them if we can. And that's our goal. The only exception to that is occasionally on the self-storage side, we'll also build from the ground up. For the most part, we're buying existing assets that are, to varying degrees, income producing, but we see an opportunity to make them better over time. So that's the short summary.
Operational efficiency, the operational efficiency part. So you guys are not buying distressed properties and then fixing it up or, buying homes and filling it on the lots. These are properties that are already up and running in decent shape. And then you just, as you mentioned, come in and do a little bit of tweaking and then obviously bring on other lines of revenue.
Correct. We generally aren't doing although we did many, many years ago, we would, look at a property that had, very low occupancy rate and, no park owned home, a lot of park owned homes, but then, the vacant pads, we'd go buy homes, bring them in, sell them off. And, it's a pretty tough business model to execute at any scale. So we're okay with bringing in homes from time to time. So about a week and a half ago, we closed on a roughly 400 unit mobile home park near Columbus, Ohio, in a submarket of Columbus that we like. And that property has roughly 20 vacant pads. So, it's producing, it's performing, there's opportunity, all of these other things we were looking at doing. But one of the obvious ones is to bring in homes, fill the 20 vacant pads with homes, sell them off, through consignment or other, and add value to that asset amongst other initiatives. So we will, to summarize, we will from time to time bring in homes. We're just not looking at a property with, I looked at one last month that was brought to me. It was 30% occupancy. That's quite heavy lifting, a lot of risk, and not very scalable. So that one we would shy away from.
Gotcha. Now, for listeners that are not familiar with mobile home parks, I think it would be great if you could just explain a little bit more about the model. For example, that the tenants own the homes, they rent the pads, and maybe a little bit if you want to add anything to that, just to give them an overview of the park operations, because it's a little bit of a different model.
Sure. And so before I tell you, I guess the what, I think it's important to address the why. And so the overarching, promise the industry makes is a higher, a fairly high quality of life for a low cost, or that's the objective of the industry and what we seek to provide. So the way it does that is, one of the most, what makes housing unaffordable typically is the cost of land. And so the mobile home park asset class is pretty unique in that it bifurcates the ownership of land that goes to the park owner and the ownership of the home, which goes to the, to the owner of the home. So it's, to a degree, it's a form of a residential ground lease to a degree. So that brings some affordability and cost savings to the customer for not having to buy the land. They rent the land, they get savings there, they own their home. So the overall stack is cheaper than, other. So our goal, there's a number of ways you can operate a mobile home park. We see some people in the space, they like to own all the homes. They like the park to own all the homes. Those are called park-owned homes. And there's a whole model for that. It's not, in our opinion, the best way to go, but it's, each person can define their own path. Our preference, our model is where we own the park, we own the land, we own, the amenities, we own the way that the property is operated, but each home is owned independently by the person who resides in it. And so you have, pride of ownership, you have more of a community feel, trash cans, and it's easier to manage. It shows better, more durable income, all of those things. So we prefer the tenant-owned home model versus the park-owned home model. But those are, and then there's, the hybrid of, half tenant-owned homes, half park-owned homes. But we prefer the tenant-owned home model.
Is in your model in some of the parks, are there RVs playing into that as well, or that's not something that you've incorporated?
Yeah, so the RV business is it's similar in ways from a distance, but it's a pretty different model, different business from an operating standpoint, from a lending standpoint. It's just different. So no, we keep it to mobile homes. It's not abnormal to have a RV. In some cases, if you buy a 400 unit mobile home park, you may have one or two RVs that are set up on a mobile home lot. Which is a way the park owner gets some income while they wait to bring in a home. But that is not our model. We want to bring in a home, sell it away and make it a mobile home lot, not an RV lot. So the short answer is we're not in the RV business, and we try to keep it to a minimum.
You've mentioned self-storage. That's part of the fund as well. I think it'd be great if you could just touch on that industry a little bit. Why it was attractive, why it's something that you've included in the fund, and how it plays in from a diversification perspective, and then also from a recession-proof investment perspective.
Yeah. So I'll do my best to kind of bundle it all together in one and make it succinct. So first, there's some benefits that storage brings. There's some benefits that mobile home parks bring. So historically, if you look over the last 20 years, and this is a very general statement that may vary in isolated cases from time to time, but generally speaking, mobile home parks have produced a little bit more cash flow than storage relative to purchase price. And storage has produced a little bit more capital appreciation, or due to the cap rate difference between the asset classes, for a dollar of NOI in the mobile home park space and a dollar of NOI in the storage space, the dollar of NOI for storage was worth more than the mobile home park, than a mobile home park would be valued at. So to summarize, you get a little more cash flow from mobile home parks. You get a little bit more capital appreciation or equity from storage. So if, blending them both together, assuming a 50-50 allocation, you're getting a little bit more cash flow than if you just bought storage. You're getting a little bit more equity than if you just bought mobile home parks. So that's a real 100,000 foot view. But then when you look into, real estate and different asset classes, if you look, from a pretty long-term perspective, historically, when you look at a bunch of different metrics, typically what you'll find is, number one will be mobile home parks, number two will be storage, or vice versa. So, it's our opinion that over the last 20 years, mobile home parks and storage from an NOI perspective, have been number one and number two, the best performing asset classes in terms of the ability to grow NOI over time. Mobile home parks grow it a little bit differently than storage. So, for example, if I were to say in 2008 and 2010, what was one of the better asset classes to own? It was mobile home parks. But from 2010 to call it 2018, from an NOI perspective, one of the best asset classes to own was storage. So if you have a longer term view in the future, and we think those dynamics will persist, we think both storage and mobile home parks will be good places to place capital for the long run. We like the industry dynamics, and we think blending both together in one vehicle gives a pretty broad footprint in terms of geographic diversification, then also asset-based, asset class diversification. And then lastly, from a perspective of management, management is actually fairly similar across both. So we can also manage both asset classes under one roof and in many cases bring best practices from self-storage into the mobile home park space. And one example of that is dynamic pricing. So a lot of mobile home parks, you'll go into them and, there's one lot rent for really all the units. One lot may be twice the size of the one next to them, but it's the same monthly rate. One lot may have lake frontage and it's the same rate. And the question is, why is that? Shouldn't they be priced differently? The same can be said, what if you have one available lot left in the park and you have 10 calls that day? Shouldn't the price fluctuate by virtue of those 10 calls, just like airline seats and hotels, called dynamic pricing? So the opportunity to bring an improved management model to the mobile home park space, we think is pretty compelling. And we think there's a lot of opportunity there over time. So that's as simple as I could make it.
No, I appreciate that. And that actually was two of my notes here that I was writing as we're having a conversation to touch on as well. You've touched on the management, which was one of them that I wanted to ask a little bit more. The other one was the geographic diversification. What are some of the markets that these parks and self-storage facilities that you operate in?
Yeah, so we're a national firm. We'll buy nationally for both storage and mobile home parks. And I didn't answer this earlier, so I'll just mention it quickly. Kind of where we play in the space is we're, for lack of a better term, we're bigger than small, but smaller than big. So we like to think we're incredibly nimble. So if we see a deal today that we like, we have the capital and resources and the ability to put it under contract really quickly. We may have a contract your way within an hour or two. And often can go see the property within a day or two to get a sense. So we're pretty nimble. So we're typically a little bit more nimble than somebody who's much larger. And then we're far more capitalized than somebody who's smaller and more experienced. So we like the place that we sit. We have the ability to buy a lot of assets. We also have the ability to do nothing if we don't see anything we like. And we don't have a big overhead where we have to continue to acquire just to support, the overhead. So we like the ability to do a lot if we need and do nothing if it's warranted. So, and then sticking to that is just discipline, but we like that position. But in terms of geographic, we're national. Currently, the fund owns a storage facility in basically Boca Raton, Florida, Melbourne, Palm Bay, Virginia Beach, two in Dallas, Texas, one in Austin, Texas, one in Houston, Texas, two in Denver, Colorado. It owns a mobile home park in Gillette, Wyoming, two in Minot, North Dakota, one that we just recently acquired in Ohio. And then we've got a number of others that are in negotiation or under contract. So nationally.
Nationally, one management question that I had on might just be a general question too. At what size of units does it make sense to have an on-site manager?
Yeah, good question. It depends on the scale and the proximity by which one's managing. So because we're a national firm, we need a certain size of an asset to justify and warrant management. So if it's a location that we do not have scale in, then generally we want to be around 150 units plus or minus. if it's a market we already have scale in, well, then we can maybe go down the ladder and make it, you know, 75 to 100 or larger. But generally speaking, we're not going to buy, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 unit mobile home park.
Right, right. Very, very interesting stuff. Ryan, one habit I've observed from very wealthy and successful people is that they're always studying new subjects and learning new skill sets. What are you currently studying? What new skill sets are you currently learning?
You know, I learn a lot by being proximity with people that I admire and value. So I'm always, trying to find ways to spend time with people that I think are incredible in their field and try to, you know, in the hopes that their skills and talents rub off on me by, let's call it osmosis. So beyond that, you know, I try to read as much as I possibly can. I'm reading a book right now on Jamie Dimon that I'm enjoying quite a bit. But most of my learning comes through proximity with people that I think are pretty exceptional.
I like it. Proximity to power is powerful indeed. Now, a core message in our show is to leave our families, communities, and the world better than we found it by passing down a mindset, values, and principles to future generations, not just money. So if you cannot pass on any money to future generations, and we're only allowed to pass on three principles to them to build wealth and achieve happiness and success, what would they be?
That's a tough one. It's a good one. I'll go simple because I try to make things as simple as possible. And the first one was passed on to me years ago by somebody I deeply admire and has been massively successful. And it's the simple belief of believing in yourself. And, you know, that's eye rolling, you know, to hear and to listen to. But at the end of the day, when the rubber meets the road, it's actually really tough to do. So believe in yourself, not just deciding right now that you will, but actually doing it when it comes time to do something that requires that. So belief in yourself would be one. I would say number two, and in no particular order, not that one's better than the other, but I would say do the right thing. You know, there's 1,000 decisions daily we all make, and some are in the light, some are not. But I would you know, challenge my kids to do the right thing, and do challenge them to, and try to live by the same standard, but always do what's right, whether it's seen or unseen. And then lastly, I would just say, leave people better than you found them. I think that's has to do with stewardship and stewarding the resources, whether it's time, you know, talents, people, whatever it is, but leaving things better than you found them. I think those are, you know, there's a litany of things I could say. Those are three that come off the top of my head.
I like all three. Thank you for sharing them. And as a former athlete, that believing yourself is a crucial one too, which ties into the work that you put in, right? The preparation, doing it, standing on the mound as a pitcher. You believe in yourself because you know that you've thrown that pitch so many times. So when it comes down to it, there's definitely some self-belief there.
Yep, for sure.
Absolutely. The same thing with wealth, reading, studying, researching, learning from folks, and then also doing. Ryan, how can my listeners learn more about you, your company? How can they follow you? And how can they stay informed of all of the projects that you're involved with?
Yeah, well, if I can be helpful to anybody who's listening, I'd welcome the opportunity. I'm on LinkedIn. My website is elevationcapitalgroup.com. And my email is ryan@elevationcg.com. So feel free to reach out. Let me know how we could be helpful. And thanks for giving us your time and listening.
Fantastic. Ryan, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your journey, your knowledge, and providing so much value for my listeners.
You bet. Thanks again.
MC Lobshire, the creator and host of the Cashflow Ninja and president of Producers Wealth. And I'm on a mission to help you achieve economic and financial freedom as quickly as possible. I achieve this by integrating the infinite banking concept with real estate investments to increase your efficiency and returns and recapture cash flow that you're not even aware of that you're losing. I share the number one strategy for investors in my holistic wealth creation course at yourownbankingsystem.com. That's yourownbankingsystem.com. Thank you for joining me again on the Cashflow Ninja. Thank you for all your support. You rock. If you like what you hear and appreciate what we're trying to build here at the Cashflow Ninja, Please subscribe, rate, and review our show on iTunes and share our show with family, friends, and your network. If you're not a subscriber to our newsletter, you can sign up for our newsletter at cashflowninja.com or text cashflowninja to 44222. I'm also posting daily videos on Facebook and YouTube and will live stream weekly starting May 2018. To make sure you don't miss any of the live streams, please like and subscribe to my Facebook and YouTube platforms. I'm also dropping content on Instagram daily. Be sure to follow us on Instagram to get in on the action. I want to thank you for spending your most precious resource with me today, your time. That's our show for today. Until next time, live a life of passion and purpose on your terms. This presentation is for educational and informational purposes only. The information being presented and considered does not consider your particular financial objectives or situation, and it does not make personalized recommendations. This material is not intended to replace the advice of a qualified tax and legal advisor or other qualified professionals, and you should not use the information in place of a customized consultation with a licensed professional regarding your specific personal financial objectives, situation, and needs. We believe the information provided is reliable, but we do not guarantee its accuracy, timeliness, or completeness.